Just so you know who I am, for those who don't know who I am Kim Ellsworth. I'm the Director of Education. This is a fairly new position for those who have been around for a while. I think we understand that. We have Jared Taylor. Wait, raise your hand. He's the big man, right? He's the CEO. He's been here for, I don't know how many years you've been here, but a long time. And his dad is our founder of Heritage Academy. So I work directly with Jared and I work with the principals. So I have been around Heritage for a little while. I started back in 1999 as a teacher here on the Mesa campus. I was super young, I'm gonna say that, because that dates me quite a bit. Very young in 1999, before I had kids, and I was able to be here and teach on this campus. And then years later I joined and I was able to open the Levine campus as their principal, and then the Maricopa campus I opened as well. So I've been around Heritage and I love being able to visit all the campuses and get to know all of you. So thank you for all that you do. I see what you're doing, we see what you're doing, and we absolutely love it. So I did want to introduce a little bit of what's close to my heart is this. Love them, teach them, and hold them accountable. So hopefully you've seen this on your campus or around. How important it is to love our scholars and to teach them, but also to hold them accountable and to think about how we do that. What is it? How do we teach them that we love them? How do we show them that we love them? And when we know, and when they know they're loved, they're going to learn that much better because they know they're loved. So when we think about the boundaries and we think about the expectations that we put on our scholars, that is showing them that we love them because we're giving them those expectations and those boundaries. And they look for that. I remember when people tell me they were nervous about teaching high school because I'd only taught in elementary, and I was like, they're just the same as a second grader in a bigger body. They need the same boundaries and the same expectations. And that way we show them how much we love them. And then we're able to teach them and better and get connected to them. And that accountability, how important that accountability is, so that they can learn their own on their own, right? It all goes back to what we do as teachers. So I'm gonna tell you a little bit of story. I'll tell you a little bit of story about this kid. So this kid, he's one of mine. Super difficult class, okay, very difficult class. As a little kid, I was called all the time. You couldn't sit him anywhere because he would talk to everybody. So they'd say, have you talked to him about talking in class, teach us? And I tried, you know, doing the best I can as a parent to try and talk to him to get him to quit talking to every single person. I got a call from the principal that they'd been struggling with people who were putting toilet paper in the urinals and overflowing and flooding the boys' bathroom. And that day they had caught my child, this one, doing that, flooding the bathrooms. Can you work with him? Can you please do this? So what I found from that school is how much they worked with me, with this child who was so difficult. And those teachers would call me frequently, but we worked together to figure this out. And they loved that kid so much, and he knew it. He loved going to school. He loved his teachers. He loved everything except for that he was so difficult. Teaching him how to read was very difficult because he couldn't just sit there. But I have to tell you that he passed away in the second grade. So as a second grader, he passed away. And at his funeral, we had his teacher speak. Because you know who was most influential to that child that year? Was that teacher. And a lot of times as teachers, we have that influence on these children. Many times we spend more hours with them than they do with their own parents. So to remember how much of an influence you have and why they need to know that they're loved so that we can teach them, that we can hold them accountable. We can do these things because we have that influence. But to remember when they're naughty, when they're this naughty little kid in kindergarten. Is Sharon in here? Sharon, there she is. She was his first grade teacher. And the influence that those three teachers had in that short amount of time, to remember that you can do that. And so we're gonna talk about credibility today, and we're gonna talk about how all of that leads back to loving them, teaching them, and holding them accountable. That credibility that we have as teachers and showing them those boundaries and the expectations and holding them to it. So with that, I'm going to introduce the principals who are going to train you today. So first of all, we have Emily Asanovich. Some of you know her. Raise your hand over here. Emily is the principal of our Levine campus. She has been out there since day one with me. We started that campus on two floors, and some rooms had no flooring in them, but it was super fun to start. And I knew she was going to be a leader from the beginning because she's amazing. She has great communication. She knows how to really have a relationship with those scholars, so you're going to learn a lot from her today. And then we have Shalisa Arnold. Raise your hand. Yay! She is our principal of Gateway K-8. So she has been, and she is an expert in that K-8 area. And I appreciate her so much and her expertise. I haven't worked in the K-5 area in a few years now. And so she is one I lean on quite a bit. So I really appreciate her expertise and what she's able to lend to our whole heritage community. She's been with us for a few years and we absolutely love and adore her.
Talking just a little bit before we dive into credibility, today's session is going to be very tactical. It's gonna be a lot of information thrown at you because we're talking about competence and we all look around us, you know? They didn't find us on the side of the street and said, please, please, please come teach at Heritage. We all chose Heritage, we wanted to teach here. And I know in my experience with Heritage that we only want the best and the brightest here at Heritage. So competence is not something that is slim in this room right now. We have a room that's quite intimidating, frankly, that I know you're experts in your field, and I'm so grateful to be among you today. We're gonna dive into competence a little bit. Super tactical, what can we do? A lot of heavy information to improve our craft in our classroom. But you can't forget what has to come before that. In our motto that we've really been working on this year, it's love them first, then teach them and hold them accountable. Today's training is really going to be about teach them and holding them accountable, but we can't forget that important piece of love them because really that's foundational to everything else we do. They're not going to get the teach them and the hold them accountable unless they feel of our love for them. This week's been a little bit of a whiplash for me in my educational journey. Starting with a week ago, I got a random Facebook friend request. I knew instantly, oh my goodness, Travis Talbot. I had him in second grade in such and such a year. He was my second class of second graders. I haven't thought of him for forever. Well, sure enough, you know, Facebook Messenger pops up and he had sent me not just a friend request, but a message as well. And he said, hi, Miss Arnold. I'm not sure if you remember me. Do I remember you? Of course I remember you. Travis Talbot was adopted. And so that came with a separate bag of tricks, as we all know as teachers. We worked awfully hard with Travis, but such just an innate ability to receive information, just intelligent. He went on to recount, I don't know if you remember this, he said, you came to my birthday party. And I remember that you bought me the space Lego set. And he remembered that. I did not remember going to his birthday party or buying him a Lego set. I'm glad I did, because that would be terrible if I didn't. But I went to a lot of birthday parties. I went to a lot of church functions, games, you know, all of those sorts of things. That's what you do when you're a teacher and you want your children to know that you love them desperately. So when I accepted his friend request, I saw that he was a rocket engineer with SpaceX. I mean, hello. My credibility was like, woo, I did that, right? No, I did not. But clearly he was interested in that because something about him made me buy him that Lego set. So he was thrilled to tell me about his family, that he was married and had two children and with a third on the way in March. I told him that March, the most intelligent people are born in March. Right? I mean, that's what I've known my whole life. But so he has a third baby coming in March. And so very soon after that, I got another friend request from Ryan Talbot, his little brother, whom I also have in second grade. And not seconds after that, his mom, friend request. Seconds after that, his dad, friend request. And the whole family's back together again. And his parents are overseas doing something. His little brother lives locally with a new family as well. And he lives in Texas. Where he is working for SpaceX. And just what that moment did for me, when we think of loving them, the fact that he remembered me enough to reach out and to recount some stories. And we've been exchanging messages since then. I hope to meet up with him. I am planning a trip to Texas in March. And so it would be nice if we were to be able to see each other. But Of course I remembered him. Of course I remembered the work that I put in to him when he needed it as a second grader. Of course I remember how involved his parents were and how thrilled I was when I got his little brother the next year. Those are things we remember as teachers. That's the impact that we have on children and of all ages. And we remember them all. Sometimes, I don't know if you remember me. Oh, I remember you. And then the whiplash of that high of holy cow, I love what I do and I love that I get to impact children in the way that I do, was met on the other side of the spectrum yesterday at 10 a.m. when I got a text while at school, running around doing the things that we do while we're at school, that a past student of mine that I had in kindergarten and then again in fourth grade, I was his principal in fifth and sixth grade, got to watch his journey, successful journey through junior high, and he graduated at the top of his class in high school, was ready to graduate in May with a nursing degree, and that he died by suicide on Wednesday night. Wasn't the first student that I've lost, and I know it won't be the last, and I know I'm among people who have been met with that challenge as well. But the fact that someone thought Miss Arnold would want to know made an impact on me, and I was quickly able to reach out to his family. And obviously, it's still a little bit fresh, but that's what happens because we love them, because we love our students. And because we love them, we're able to teach them and we're able to hold them accountable. And the work that you're doing in your classrooms and on your campuses will be far reaching. So remember that when we talk a little bit later in the session about some everyday challenges that we have, that what we do really makes a difference. And if you focus on loving them, the rest will come. So keep that in mind, because the rest of the training is really pretty tactical. It's about teaching them and holding them accountable, but please don't forget that big first piece of loving them most of all. Okay, so we are Dave Stewart Jr. He's the man, right? We've been studying him this year, specifically on credibility, which is only one part of the book, but man, I've got lots of nuggets out of that one little section. So we're gonna start today by really just hearing from him first and foremost. If you remember from the first training that we had this, and it was a big paper though, but we had our CCP circles, right? So we had some activities to do about that today. We're really focusing on that middle circle, the competency circle today. So we're gonna watch Dave Stewart Jr. It's a short little 3-minute video. He's gonna give you an assignment of something to do on this CCP circle. So have a pen or something handy. It's nothing intensive. You really just have to identify one area is all. So don't stress yet, but we're gonna watch this video and then we'll talk.
Morning, colleagues. Here we are for signal booster number 2 for teacher credibility. Remember, this course is teacher knows what the heck they're doing, and they care about what they're doing, and they care about who they're doing it with. In other words, we're exuding signals of CCP. I'm gonna put it up on the screen again, because this signal booster is all about using the CCP sheet to identify a weakness of ours that is super annoying to not necessarily our students, not necessarily our colleagues. Nope, we're gonna pick a weakness here that annoys us. Okay, if you're able to print off a copy of the CCP sheet, it's linked to in the description below, and this is a pretty texty picture on purpose. I made this not to be a pretty illustration in a book, although my goodness, isn't it so pretty, but instead to be a useful tool for self-diagnosis, self-reflection. So what I want you to do right now is put a little plus mark next to any of these bullet points that you would say, yeah, I'm a pretty good signal sender in this area. I do definitely think that each of my students has noticed that I care about them personally. I do definitely think that my students would agree that I'm a good classroom manager, that I'm very organized, that I'm ready to go to start classes, so on and so forth. Put pluses next to your strength. And then put a minus next to any of these that you're like, yeah, these are kind of weak. And after you've done that, I want you to look at the list again, and I want you to just ask your gut, ask your instinct, which of these drives me the most nuts or just bugs me that I'm not good at? I'm asking you to be very, very subjective right now. Not analytical, don't refer to what's gonna give you the best teacher evaluation score. Just which of these is a weakness that drives you nuts? And I'm gonna give 3 examples from my practice historically to make this really clear what I'm talking about. Number 1, classroom management. I can still picture younger Dave teaching a class that at the beginning of the year he had really liked. And there was this one kid in particular, Sean, who just had a personality that seemed to be like a middle-aged man's inside of a 14-year-old's body. And I found Sean absolutely hilarious and funny and entertaining and engaging and all these things. He was a blast to teach. And he had things to say very, very, very frequently throughout the day. And he definitely liked the fact that I liked his sense of humor. Well, fast forward to October 15th-ish, and I am about to go nuts if Sean says one more thing. What was once endearing is now not. It's not just Sean saying everything that pops into his head that he thinks is funny. It's all of his classmates, too. And my class frequently looked more like a zoo gone wild than it did like a ninth grade classroom should look. This was frustrating. I can picture driving home one day and realizing this is a kid that I used to get such a kick out of. But I had no clear plan. I had no consistent ways of following up with that plan. And so I ended up creating a monster, encouraging him to say the things that popped into his head. Had now come to the point where my classes were very, very difficult to manage, and I couldn't get through lessons without becoming extremely, internally at least, frustrated. And so I started to do something a bit wild and crazy. I started Googling, how do you manage a classroom? And I came across a website by a guy named Michael Linson called smartclassroommanagement.com. And I just started to eat. I was hungry for help with classroom management. Michael Linson was very clear and explicit, and he had systems and procedures, and they weren't hyper complicated, and they didn't require me to be the teacher out of the movie. They were very commonsensical and simplistic. And so I began to adopt some of the things that Michael Linson was saying. And very, very quickly, I made gains in my classroom management that in the previous 5 years, through not really focusing on this one area, I had not been able to make. For the scope of our mini course, I can't walk through all the ins and outs of classroom management or self-organization or how to structure a lesson, but I can say that there's massive benefit in picking one thing, just one, on the CCP chart that annoys you, makes you dislike your job, and doing nothing for a month professionally except thinking about improving that one thing. Reading blogs, asking colleagues, watching teachers teach who you've heard run a pretty tight ship are all great things to do to become a more effective classroom manager yourself. The idea with all these things is not just to take and copycat other people necessarily, but it is to become an earnest apprentice of a specific micro part of our craft that drives you nuts that you're bad at. Example number two. I think actually for the sake of time, I'm just going to give two examples, and I'm going to go straight to now. None of this in the past resolved stories. Right now, I currently have a stack of pieces of writing that I need to score for my students. And colleague, I'm embarrassed to admit that it has been over a week since the students submitted these pieces of writing. And as you can see on the CCP chart, can you provide helpful and timely feedback, Mr. Stewart? Well, apparently not. That's what I'm signaling to my students with each subsequent day that passes, and I don't give them this feedback on their papers. So that's what I'm gonna pick for this signal booster. What are you gonna pick? You circle your most annoying thing that bugs you. It just annoys you because you know that you can do better. You know it's possible to do better, but you're just not doing better and it drives you nuts. So now that we've picked this annoying gall darn thing, what do, Dave? Well, this is what we do, the stuff that we know that we can do. Set a visual reminder for yourself. I'm talking about index cards, notes on your classroom calendar, reminders in your phone. I am focused this month on blank. Faster feedback on student writing is mine. What's yours? Tell someone. You got some colleagues that you like to roll with, don't you? Tell them, this is my focus for the next month. Will you do me a big favor and ask me how this is coming for me? And please be annoying. That would be nice. Google questions. How do I get faster feedback on papers? Back in the day, I Googled, how the heck do I manage my classes better? Classroom management tips. Now, of course, anytime we're Google searching or YouTube searching or whatever, you gotta be a bit discerning, right? Don't do anything that clashes with your beliefs and values as an educator. That probably won't get you to the place where you're less annoyed, but do be open to embracing discomfort on your path to growth. And don't just read a little bit. I remember spending hours one Saturday morning reading article after article after article after article on Michael Lenson's website about classroom management. I can still picture that, and it helped me to start to build this web of new concepts that I then was able to use in my practice and experiment with on the following Monday. And ask around amongst your colleagues. Be brave. Send an email out to your staff. Hey, y'all, I'm really disorganized and I'd like to get better. Is anyone really good at this? And could I just stop in your classroom and ask you a couple of questions? Ask your students. Students, who in this building really rocks at opening a lesson strongly, at closing a lesson well, at exuding passion for teaching? I want to go watch this person. And email them, text them, knock on their door and say, can I just come watch you? Because kids say that you're great at blank. You are an intelligent individual, but if you're like many intelligent individuals in education, you sometimes struggle with focusing. You don't pick individual things to get better at. You try to get better at too many things, and then you become overwhelmed. Your efforts are diluted, your results are minuscule, and you eventually lose credibility because you're not really growing and you're not getting papers back to students like you know how to do, Dave. All right. Pick your most annoying weakness on the CCP chart and then go do everything that you can for about a month to get better at that one thing. I promise you will not come out of this experience the same caliber of teacher. You'll be better.
Okay, so let's talk just a little bit then. He encouraged us to choose just one. That's really hard for teachers. But we're going to choose just one area for our focus today. I love that he used the word diluted. If we try to focus on too many things, our efforts will be diluted. So we want to really concentrate our efforts on just one area. So really what he's now going to encourage us to do, and we'll go into this a little bit later, is to make a plan for that. Put something in place so that you can, again, direct all of your efforts in that one area, whatever you selected, so that we actually see the dial move just a little bit. Instead of being so scattered in many different areas where we see a little of growth, a little bit of growth across the board, we want to see a lot of growth in just one area. So that's the goal. Okay, let's fast forward now to, you probably recognize this, from the five key beliefs. We talked about this at our very first training out at the Gateway campus. We were able to see this. He actually has a book, The Five Key Beliefs, that comes before The Will to Learn. So if you're interested in that, it's a good book to check out. But I just want your thoughts for just a second. Knowing that today we're focused on credibility, look where credibility is positioned in that pyramid. What does this diagram tell us about credibility? Anybody? Anybody? Yes, Andrea.
It's the foundation.
It's the foundation. How many of you have that same thought? Clearly, right? It's the foundation. So if it is the foundation, what else does it tell us about credibility?
We have to have it.
We have to have it. I love that, right? And if we don't, what's going to happen? The house will come tumbling down, right? So everything we do all day is built upon credibility. So that's why we're really focusing this year on credibility. So strategy two, specifically today, that's what we're working on. Strategy two is to improve at one thing. That's it, one thing, which will increase our credibility. So what we do today, we're hoping, is going to increase your competence. From that first slide, we know competence equals credibility. So hopefully what we do today will help to at least give you a direction to increase your competence, which we know will in turn then increase your credibility. That's the goal.
Stuart talks about selecting one area. You chose one signal from the CCP chart to focus on instead of all of them. Let's maximize our efforts. How, as teachers, do we prioritize where we choose to spend our time building credibility? He lays out eight areas of practice that directly influence our credibility as teachers. Notice that the second four, so 5, 6, 7, 8, those are things that require, they take place outside the classroom. All right, we are gonna turn our focus today to the first four. That's where we're really gonna dive in. We're gonna talk about practices, intentions that take place inside our classroom that can signal or undermine our credibility. All right, so let's take a look at those. The first section that he identifies is classroom stewardship. I love that he uses that. Classroom management stewardship. These are practices that create a learning conducive environment for all. Do kids come into your classroom and they feel safe? Do they feel valued? Do they feel heard? Those are all those things that several of you talked about. It takes time. It just because you got the open door doesn't mean that kids are going to come in and feel that. You have to cultivate. Number two, student motivation and engagement. This is knowing the importance of those five key beliefs that we touched on, knowing how to cultivate those and why they're important in your classroom. Number three, how can you chunk lessons effectively to maximize not just your time in preparing them, but to maximize the little bit of time that you get your scholars? Because there's good practices that can do that. And even our best intentions at times can kind of work against that and help and waste time. So is there ways that we can use or incorporate activities into our lesson planning that might be replicated from day to day to provide consistency, continuity, save time, build some of those practices, okay? Number four, how students learn or the science of learning. You're all teachers, you understand kids, but do we really understand kids? How do they learn? How do their brains function? Are we designing lessons with that in mind? Because we might have a great visually accurate lesson, but is it geared towards our students and how their brains are working? Okay, so the first step in strategy two, according to Dave Stewart, is to select an area of improvement that has the greatest chance to improve our credibility signaling to our scholars. How do we go about choosing an area to focus on? First of all, as teachers, we're typically not patient, right? We go into teaching, many of us are perfectionists, we are knowledgeable, we want to share that knowledge, and so it's difficult to kind of hone in on some of those things because we have so much to cover, so much to do, right? But we've got to trust the research and trust the process. Like he says, the quickest way to see progress is to consolidate that effort. So we're going to make quicker work in improving when we focus. So I want you to take just a minute. I'm gonna just pose these questions for you. I just want you to think about them, just a little bit of reflection. On page 79 and 80, there's a deeper description of the four areas we're talking about for those that are following along. But I'm gonna go back to a different slide here in a minute. But first I want you to just ponder some of these things. Number one, when we're looking to improve inside of our classroom, when we're looking to, again, we're focusing on improving our credibility signaling. Are we going to select an area that we are intuitively drawn to or instinctively bothered by? Maybe it's something that we can do well, but when I do it, it just takes so much darn time. But it works, so I'm gonna keep doing it. Maybe it's something you currently don't do well, despite trying. Put the research in. You've heard other colleagues love this lesson, love this activity, and it just doesn't work. Maybe it's something you've up to this point in your career not really prioritized. Or lastly, maybe it's something that seems most likely to help you and your scholars. There's any number of reasons to look into your classroom and select one of these areas to focus your intentions in the next little while to help improve your credibility.
Okay, let's give you a couple of examples before you actually have to commit, before you have to choose, making you nervous. Let's give you just a couple of samples. So this slide I love, little framework, it's hard to see on the PowerPoint. It's a little bit too small for actually seeing the words, but it comes right out of the book. So jot that down, it's on page 86, and it will be well worth your time to take a peek at that as looking just a very effective lesson planning framework is really what that is. I think especially with a 90-minute block, it's sometimes hard to fill that time. It's not hard to fill the time because we have a ton of information to share with our scholars, but sometimes it's hard to keep their attention and keep their attention up in the elementary world. You know, at 5 minutes, it's hard to keep their attention for that long. We have a few elementary people in here this time. So having a plan, having something that's completely broken down can be very beneficial. So let's talk about, we're gonna talk two of the four. So we'll talk a few examples on that classroom management, classroom stewardship. If you're in your book, On page 81, they talk about classroom management, break it down just a little bit. I love that Dave Stewart Jr. talks about Michael Lindzen. I've been a fan of Michael Lindzen for, 10 years or so. He's kind of the modern day Harry Wong, who also was game changing for a lot of people in education. Just very nuts and bolts, very practical strategies that will help you be successful as a teacher. Michael Lindzen is that for classroom management. So he's a great one to just get the job done, which I love. So another thing that we've practiced a little bit from our trainings before that dovetails into kind of this idea of classroom stewardship or management is the warmly authoritative teacher presence. Do you all remember talking about that? And the checklist that we had, we did peer observations, filling that out so that we could be a little reflective on our own practice and what we're presenting to our scholars. That's on page 83, the things you do with your body, how you stand, how you approach scholars, what does your voice sound like, are you too fast? That's me, always. So that's all going into classroom stewardship, classroom management. On page 84, they give a couple examples of just some sentence frames, really. If you're struggling with a few kids, what can you do? Be very direct, so-and-so, I need you to blank, fill in the blank, whatever that is, and then trust but verify, go back, make sure they're doing what they need to do. So I love the samples that they're giving, if that's maybe an area you want to focus on. So this one, this slide up here is then the third section that Dave Stewart Jr. is talking about with basic lesson planning. Again, that's on page 86 in your book. I love that he breaks that into blocks. So determine the blocks of learning that actually work well for you. Which ones work well at the beginning? What do you want that to look like in the middle and in the end? Also determine what modes of learning work for your specific area. That's gonna look different in science than it's going to look in English. It's going to look different in art than it will in drama. So you know your area and you have to determine what those blocks of time will look like in your specific area. Determine what blocks work well. If you end up with extra time, does this ever happen to you? Ever? I mean, we always have a lot to say, but every once in a while, and it's not the same across the board. You'll have a class where you cruise through information very quickly, and then you'll have another one that you just feel like, oh my goodness, we're never gonna finish, right? So you have to have a backup plan. And he calls that backup plan time permitting blocks or incidental blocks. And I love that. So have a short list of things that are planned, prepped, ready to do that you've kind of practiced with your class that if you end up with extra time, you can pull that in, whether that's Quizlet, review games, quick challenge questions, short videos that are gonna reinforce what you're doing, but have some of those set aside so that you're ready at the whim if you need to pull that out. So just have those ready, but I love this lesson frame. So if you're selecting the third one where you want effective lesson planning, look at this framework because it really does help us focus our attention on what we want our lesson to look like and how we go about kind of splitting that up. Instead of just saying, oh, I have 90 minutes to teach these three concepts, break that down and really get that on a smaller scale, and it's a little more palatable for us. So those are just a couple examples, two of the four.
Now that you have identified this, here's what we challenge you to carry forth. What do you do with this information? All right, this is up to you guys. But here's the next step. After this, we're not doing this now, you're gonna take this back and you need to break it down. Whatever you've identified, what do you need to know to put a plan into action? Break it down to that subcomponent level. Make sure it's easier to practice and improve, just like you do with your students, okay? Next, we challenge you to get out and watch your colleagues. There are so many, this room is full of experts. You guys have strengths in areas that you probably don't even recognize. Okay, so watch colleagues in action. Read books on teaching to help your improvement along. Identifying an area of focus is going to help you narrow your path so that you're better able to find the resources that you need to help. All right, let's summarize this. Make sure that you understand improving on one thing at a time is not settling for mediocrity. So many of us we need to approach the whole thing, the whole picture, the whole puzzle. But focusing in one area is not settling for mediocrity. It's being smart. It's working smarter, not harder. And once you master one skill, what do? Go on to the next one. Go on to the next one. All right? Okay, I do not want to spend a lot of time on this, mostly because I'm guilty of all of them. Okay, but this is very important. We do want to touch on this. Why? Why do we want to talk about things that kill credibility in the classroom? Well, if we're going to put all this effort into building credibility, we don't want to undermine ourselves, but it's so easily done. If you know me, my mode of operandi, I'm sarcastic. It just comes out sometimes before I mean it to. Never malicious, but sometimes with kids, like, Miss A, can I get a schedule change? Yeah. No, it just happens, right? Nobody in this room intentionally sets out to humiliate their kids. I guarantee you, there is not a single person in here that sits down to plan their lesson and they're thinking, man, how can I bore them today? You're not doing that. Nobody is questioning that. But if we're being honest, this stuff happens. All right? One thing that my brain always goes to when I read this list, the boring of the students. Again, nobody sets out to do that. But how many times, think to yourself, have you been in a lesson where you were like, yes, this is going to be so great, and then it's a flop. There's no interaction. They're just staring at you, right? And then what happens? Somebody raises their hand and makes some off-the-wall comment. And then everybody livens up. And what do? You kind of go with it. What signal did I just send to my class? Because I've done that before. Miss A can go over here if we take her, right? And so it's really important that we're aware of that. Didn't do it intentionally, but I know it happened more than once. Okay, I had a fantastic conversation with a teacher this week, and I didn't tell you that I was doing this, but I will not tell anybody who it was. It was a great conversation. I was able to be in a classroom, and a great classroom. I was enjoying it. The kids were working. Everything was going great. They were on their independent practice. There were groups working. There were kids doing stuff. Teacher came to a desk, and a student wasn't doing anything. And she walked up to him, and, what are you doing? Why aren't you doing your work? I can't remember what she said. And it was funny. I thought it wasn't malicious, it wasn't harmful, there was some banter with the student, they picked up their pen, they got to work. Being the benefit of being on the other side of the room, I was able to see something that, as teachers, we don't see everything, but I was able to see the student in the corner go, right? What did that conversation, which probably was funny for the student that was in front of her, what did that signal to somebody else in the room? Under no circumstances will I stick my neck out and ask for help, right? Teacher didn't mean to do that. The student, and we're not expecting you to be perfect. It happens. We're asking you to be aware of these things. So we're not going to go through the whole list, right? Just page 39, you can find them. It's something to just make sure that you are aware of those behaviors that we bring into our classroom and how they might be sending those signals.
We're going to introduce a new character. So Dave Stewart Jr. teaches us a lot about increasing our credibility. Competence equals credibility. So what do we need to do to feel more competent? I would even add confident in there because I think competence plus confidence, it builds your confidence as well. And of course, that's going to increase your capacity and credibility. What other C words can we throw in there, right? There's lots of good C words that we're all working towards this. So that's what Dave Stewart Jr. does with the Will to Learn. Now, let's introduce a new character to you. As a leadership team last year, we were given the charge to read a book called Impact Players by Liz Wiseman. She's not an educator, she's a businesswoman, but she wrote this book, and it's probably one of the most influential books that I've read as an adult. It's a super easy read, audiobook available, so that makes it even more accessible to all of us. But there was not an unuseful page in this book, as far as I was concerned. And it doesn't matter if she's not an educator, if she's in the business world, because quite frankly, the business world is all about people And education is also about people. And so this book taught me a lot about what I need to do for and with people, but more importantly, it's employee driven. And we are all employees in this room, right? All of us are an employee. We are constantly working. We are at showing our competence and credibility as teachers. We can't forget about this other side. I think being a teacher is equal parts teacher and employee, right? We have to be a good employee and we have to be a good teacher. So just like we're building our credibility as teachers, we also need to be mindful of building our credibility as employees, employees, thank you, as well. So let's talk really quick about the teams that we're in, because this is really about teams. So we're all part of one big team called Heritage Academy. That's our team. That is about 350 strong adults. Over 4,000 students strong right now, so that's a big team of Heritage Academy. Break that down just a little bit. We're all part of another team that is our campus team, right? So all of our campuses, I think to the tune of 8 now. I think that's what we're up to, 8 different campus teams. Break that down a little more. What else do you have on your campuses? What's another team that you have on your campus? Grade level,
subject area.
Subject area, content, departments, you got it. Break that down, what else? Classrooms, I heard, excellent. Do we have maybe fine arts? Is that a team? Athletics, would that be a team? Also department, right? Depending on how that functions at your campus. Classrooms, we said. What about special education? Is that a team? Now, are department teachers part of the special education team?
Yes.
Yeah, what about student study team? Is that a team?
Yes.
Yeah, with lots of people mixed together, right? What about scholar council? Is that a team? You get where I'm going, right? Our campuses are filled with teams. Our days are filled with lots of teams. And what happens is we're all part of a team, so education is not an I sport. There's very little that we do completely independently. What we do is part of a bigger picture. And when one person on that team maybe isn't doing their part or isn't stepping up to the plate, it's going to impact everything else. So that's why I think Liz Wiseman's message is important for all of us to know, that what we do is going to impact a lot of people. So just be conscientious about that. But remember, we're thinking of you now as an employee and a member of all of the teams that we're all a part of every single day. I also like to have you reflect a little as we talk about this. Yes, we're talking about us as adults, as employees, but think about this dynamic in your own classes with your scholars, right? As we talk about these ideas of impact player and contributors, you're absolutely going to go, oh, in this class, so-and-so is an impact player. You're going to see that as well, not just with our experience here at Heritage as adults, as employees. Okay, so let's talk, before I get to the next slide, one way to improve our credibility and competence, like Emily mentioned, is to know what kills that. We work too hard, nobody wakes up and says, you know what, I wanna do as little as possible today. Or, you know what, I'm gonna be totally okay being mediocre today, that's fine. We're not here in that business. We wake up wanting to do our very best every single day. We also all have supervisors, all of us in here. We all have a job that someone else is asking us to do. This list that I'm gonna show you next isn't an exhaustive list. Out of Liz Wiseman's book, she surveyed 170 leaders across all different industries and said, what are some things that kill credibility? And just peruse that just a little, and I think we're gonna share this out a little later too, so if you don't get through all of them, it's fine, we'll share. Now, this is kind of a Debbie Downer slide, in my opinion, because again, we don't intend to do these sorts of things. We don't wake up and go, you know what? I am going to agree to my team member's face, but then go disagree behind their back. We don't do that on purpose. These are unintentional things that will sometimes happen given the everyday challenges that we have as educators and as employees. This is the reaction of that sometimes. I am guilty of a handful of these. The key is identifying that and then working to remedy that and to make that just a little bit better. But these are the credibility killers and we want to avoid those. So here's the deal. I always say at my campus, make a plan, make it happen. I say that to my junior high scholars all the time. We lecture them a little bit and give them some challenges and some charges, and then I say, all right, make a plan, make it happen. So that's what we need to do, make a plan, make it happen. Why do we engage in some of these credibility killers? Rhetorical question, please don't answer. But why do we engage in some of these things sometimes? I will tell you, people are messy. Human nature is what it is. And we are placed in positions where we can't control everything. So our gut reaction sometimes is to go to these particular credibility killers. There are several here that I feel very confident in. Oh, I never do that. I never do that. I never do that. But there are several on there that I know I personally have room for improvement in. So let's figure out how to build credibility as an employee. Let's put some work into that. We're going to talk, I think Emily's going to talk about some everyday challenges. They absolutely come into play here. And that is what really drives us to do some of these credibility killers. So again, the important part is to recognize the everyday challenges that kind of lead us in this direction so we can identify it quickly and then steer in a different direction.
Five categories that they have identified that are just challenges, whether it's in a corporation, in a classroom, in a school, it doesn't matter. These are just things that everybody that is an employee deals with. Number one is messy problems. We can think of probably a ton, right, in your classroom. These are those complex interdisciplinary issues that don't fall within any specified job boundaries. Challenge number two, unclear roles. Lack of clarity surrounding who is in charge. Maybe lack of clarity surrounding deadlines, things like that. Number three, unforeseen obstacles. These are unprecedented challenges or unforeseeable problems. Number four, moving targets. Changing needs or circumstances that render current practices ineffective or inadequate. And then lastly, unrelenting demands. These are work demands that increase faster than capacity. Did that just sum up your job? Yeah, it does. So like I said, we have them. We know they're there. How are we going to address them? We want to talk a little bit about this concept that they share in the book, Impact Players, regarding two different types of employees. And here's my disclaimer. These are both great. Sitting here, we are all contributors. We contribute to the Heritage mission. All right, but there's been some things that have been identified that set employees apart. And we're gonna do this in kind of a comparison. We're gonna compare an impact player to a contributor. And then we're gonna see what that looks like. So an impact player is somebody that does the job that's needed. As opposed to a contributor, who is someone that does their job. Is that a bad thing? Not at all. Not at all. Next, while others wait for direction, an impact player will step up and lead. A contributor will see an issue and escalate that, whereas an impact player will work to address the issue and bring possible solutions. A contributor will attempt to minimize change. We like our comfort zone, don't we? While impact players learn and adapt to change. Lastly, contributors may add to the workload, make others pick up their slack, while impact players will make heavy demands feel lighter. My campus is probably gonna roll their eyes, because how many times do you hear me say it? Many hands make light work. Let's simplify this, dress code. If I have the attitude, I don't have the time. I got too much to do. I've got a test to grade, I've got kids to blah, 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 blah. Fill in the blanks, right? And I choose not to enforce that in my classroom. What signal am I sending? Mm-hmm. I am making my colleagues, my team, pick up my slack. And it's harder for them to enforce what they've been asked to do. So that's just an example.
At my campus, we talk, ironically, with the junior high scholars again. The K-5ers don't really need this too much. They need different talks, don't peek in the stalls. They need those kind of reminders, but the junior highers need something different. But we talk about time, place, and manner, and I think that's really important in this. When we're looking at the difference between impact players and contributors, when is the right time to be an impact player? Is it the right place, and in what manner am I going to be an impact player versus a contributor? But I love the conversation. You're absolutely right. That we have to live in both of those worlds. There's time and place for all of that, and just knowing that's why we're hired here, right? Because we're professionals and expected to know the difference. So Liz Wiseman talks about something called opportunity goggles, and so in the book she says, put on your opportunity goggles. Every time we have an everyday challenge, we should put on our opportunity goggles, because we can sometimes see those everyday challenges. Most of the time we see them as a problem, right? It's a thorn in our side, like, ugh, why did this happen? Why did I get kicked out of the gym? This could go on and on and on, because I think our everyday problems, we probably could stay here for hours talking about those, but do we see them as problems, or do we change that mindset? Do we shift that perspective just a little bit to see those as an opportunity? It sounds hokey, and you know, we talk about it all the time, it's an opportunity for growth, right? But problems or everyday challenges are exactly that. They're an opportunity for growth. And if we have our opportunity goggles on, then we can practice patience that it needs to change that perspective a little bit. So our challenge is to see these everyday challenges that we've talked about as opportunities for growth, as opportunities to build our credibility, to build our confidence and credibility, which of course we know in the end that's going to make us a better teacher, and of course that will make us a better employee too. So let's take a quick look at, this is a visual in the book, so put on your opportunity goggles, everyone. So when we have these everyday challenges that pop up, we tend to see them through a threat lens. That's human nature. We all do it. Oh my goodness, I can't believe I have to do this. What? You're asking us to do this again, right? That's human nature. We see it through a threat lens. I love that someone else even brought up, because we are worried about ourselves. In that very moment, we are only focused on what does this do to me? How does this impact me? So we see it through a threat lens. There's my threat lens. So we have to put on our opportunity goggles then, so that we can change that threat into an opportunity. So someone sum this up for me right here. Yes?
When life gives you lemons, make lemonade.
When life gives you lemons, make lemonade, he said. Perfect. Or honey. Anyone allergic to bees in here? Okay, so maybe don't see that as an opportunity, okay? You continue to run. Just run. Someone will help you, but just run. So don't take that opportunity. Perfect segue, right? So see that as an opportunity to be a contributor. You have everyone's permission to be a contributor. Don't you be trying to be a hero and be an impact player for that. We don't want to take you to the hospital. We will, but be smart about it. Anyone else have anything to add about this? Opportunity goggles? Pretty self-explanatory, right? So we tell all our scholars this all the time. I am confident you have this conversation with your scholars, that it's not about what happens to you, right? It's how you respond. It's what you do with that really makes the difference. So I talk to my scholars all the time too, as we help them grow into wonderful human beings. When we talk about things that have happened, was this helpful or was this hurtful? We talk about that all the time. Same idea here, right? So taking our everyday challenges that we automatically will go to that threat lens and seeing, hang on a second, what can I do instead? Changing our mindset to be a little more flexible, creative, positive. So let's figure out very quickly, how do we build our credibility as employees then? We have a good idea from Dave Stewart Jr., our challenge of what we can do as teachers to move the dial there. But what about employees? Here's some things that you can do. Notice, none of these say you can be to work at 6:30 and stay until 9 o'clock at night. That's not what this is about, right? These aren't physical actions that are requiring you to do more. It's not adding to your workload.